I'm Paul Wegraff, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me is Molly Giordano, the Executive Director of the Delaware Art Museum. Welcome, Molly.
Hi. Hi, Paul. It's great to be here.
So glad to be chatting with you today. The Delaware Art Museum has some incredibly exciting news, which is kudos to you and the museum for the work that you've been doing over the last several years now in really expanding the museum's mission to engage new audiences, new communities, and really be a museum for the people. Let's talk about that direction and what motivated the museum to explore this and begin developing what is quite a detailed plan for this expansion of your mission and engagement of audiences.
Sure. Well, I like to start everything with a healthy dose of honesty. And I think this journey began from a place where the museum had to do a serious assessment of who we are, of what our mission was. And this, unfortunately, was at a time when we had to sell a few works of art to keep the organization afloat. And when we did that back in 2014 and 2015, we took a look at our institution and we began to question why we exist, who we serve, what we wanted to become. And that began our journey of working hand in hand with our community and various audience members to figure out how we could become a more relevant community institution. And I think in 2015 was a big turning year for us. We hosted an exhibition called Dream Streets, which brought together a number of artists reflecting on a rich artistic period in Wilmington's history from the 60s and 70s and 80s. And also we started the seed of a program called the Connected Series, where we set aside funding where community members and community groups could come to us and request support to host an art-related program here at the museum with staff resources assisting. And an incredibly diverse array of programs came forward, and that began our journey that has continued to snowball and get bigger and bigger and evolve over the last 5 years, as we've expanded our mission, expanded our vision, and truly become a community-oriented space that we believe serves all in Delaware and the greater Wilmington and Brandywine Valley.
And through that time, you've done some really exciting exhibitions, which have very powerful themes to them. You had an exhibition of photojournalism, Wilmington, 50 years after 1968, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, in 2018, the 50th anniversary of 1968. And of course, I'm sure all your listeners will either remember or know that Wilmington was the longest occupied city by the National Guard ever in American history at 9.5 months following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this has been a scar on the city, the civil unrest that followed. And as we got closer to the 50th anniversary in 2015 and 16, as it crept closer, it became clear that the city needed a citywide reflection best done through the arts. And the museum was best positioned to lead that effort. Not only did we host 3 exhibitions reflecting on that time period, but we pulled together 19 cultural, civic, and religious organizations to reflect in their own spaces on this moment in time. And I think that was one of our most successful endeavors that reflects that new vision, was that really rich time period where so many conversations were happening. And we're particularly proud that we commissioned Hank Willis Thomas, a working contemporary artist who's becoming quite well known across the country, to take photographs from the news journal at the time of the occupation and turn them into an immersive exhibition. It's hard to describe, Paul, I'm sure you remember seeing it, where you take mm-hmm. a photograph where you look at yep. it with a bright light, and behind the blown up photograph on the wall, you see words come through. It was a Xerox pamphlet spread throughout the neighborhoods in 1968 that was titled How to Live Through a Police Riot. And it was very practical advice on how citizens should prepare themselves for being under occupation. And it was something we uncovered during the exhibition research, I think at the Delaware Historical Society. Our curator, Margaret Winslow, found it in the archives. So that was just a great example of how we see our role in the community. And that's something we intend to carry forward in new ways.
Now, Could you speak to some of the new partnerships you've been able to forge up to this point as a result of this expanded mission? I mean, you've had organizations coming in presenting programming that really expands beyond what I think many think about when they think of the Delaware Art Museum and your classic collections of the Pre-Raphaelites and so on.
Yeah, and we've always been a partner-based institution, and I would say I've been here for 11 years. I mean, we started the partnerships were more traditional. We had some established school partnerships, some of which that have been going on for 10, 15 years at this point. Some community organizations like the LACC and a few others, and gradually over time, we've built those to partner with organizations from social service to religious to arts and culture. And there's so many to pick from, but I think where we're most excited is where the partnerships are heading next. It's the partnerships we've done to date have often been about a specific issue like 1968 or a specific program that we're reflecting on an issue. But now we're thinking more deeply about where is the impact where we're headed. Is it about establishing a partnership for a program, or is it about tackling something even larger, like building our creative economy through a number of partners on a long-term, a 3 to 5 year path forward? And I think that's an incredibly exciting place where we're headed. And I kind of look forward to coming back on the show in the fall and telling you all about the new vision we are putting the final touches on this summer.
And with that theme of partnership, your latest partnership with Del Art, City Lore Incorporated, and Artists Alliance Incorporated has resulted in a grant to the Delaware Art Museum from the National Endowment for the Humanities. First of all, congratulations on that grant. They are highly competitive grants. I would love for you to talk about what brought these forces together for this, what the vision is for this project, and how you were able to convince the National Endowment for the Humanities that this was a grant that was appropriate for an art museum.
Sure, and the credit here goes where it's due to our curator of contemporary art, Margaret Winslow. This, of course, is her project, as was the 1968 project and the 2015 Dream Streets exhibition, as well as our grant writer, of course. And I think it's... Yes, very competitive to get these grants, and I think it's the right moment in time. So again, we're looking back in time to the 1970s, and we're looking back specifically at something that is not well known in our society and not even well known in the arts community. It's called the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, or CETA for short. And at this time, there were block grants given to relieve unemployment from the federal government. And it actually was used creatively in a lot of cities, more than 200 cities and towns across the country, to put artists to work. And Margaret, along with her partners at City Lore, which is a center in New York City for urban folk culture that really explores the nexus of political spheres and arts communities, are looking back in time and thinking about how to use CETA as an example to consider where we are in this unique moment. So I truly think one of the reasons it got funded, of course, right now, 2021, in a post-2020 world, we're all thinking about how to get people back to work, how to address societal issues, and what better way to do that than to look back several decades ago on how that was successfully done in the 1970s. So this grant is to do a good bit of research to prepare for what we hope will be an exhibition in 2026. And throughout the way, there will be a number of projects specifically looking at how CETA impacted our city here in Wilmington and the artist community, what projects came out of it, oral history from the people that lived through that time. And we're just excited of all the rich offshoots that this grant is going to send us into.
And the timing of the CETA Act is particularly interesting too. I mean, often in you know, the COVID world, I don't want to get political here, but in the COVID world and talking about the role of federal government, often there are many articles written about the Depression years and the role that the WPA played and the Civilian Conservation Corps and these federally funded programs to sort of pull the U.S. out of the Depression of the 1930s. And that kind of funding that went into so much of our public art of that period, the public murals and plus all sorts of construction with the public schools and public buildings and post offices. But this CETA Act came out of the Nixon administration. So we see historically that, you know, federal investment in the arts has crossed party lines. So it's interesting to see that out of the FDR administration, which we hear a lot of, but we, like you said, we don't hear so much about this CETA legislation from the 70s, which was an effort of federal stimulus to undercut unemployment and target specifically artists. So with Del Art, City Lore, Artists Alliance, what will this partnership look like and what are you putting together for this project?
Well, first, I want to go back to kind of your comments about the WPA, because I think that's absolutely one of the core reasons we're doing this, is to ensure that the CETA federal employment program is part of the national discussion and consciousness as we talk about how not only to support artists, but about our economy. And I have to tell you one quick story, and then we can talk more about this grant specifically. I always think of sort of these cyclical, large federal projects that have shaped who we are. And if you talked about the WPA putting people to work in the 30s and beyond.
The Arts Progress Administration.
Yes. Post offices. Yep. And where I grew up in West Virginia, we had a lovely post office, big columns and marble floors that was built at that time. And then in the 1970s, through, I believe, I don't have 100% confirmation, through CETA funding, it was turned into a community art center when they built a more modern space. Mm-hmm. And that's just an example of how the life evolves in some of these civic partnerships. Life can evolve from looking at what CETA funded here in Wilmington. I know that the Delaware Contemporary, formerly the DCCA, has some of its roots in the 1970s and some of those CETA funded artists and projects. So I think looking at that time period and learning lessons from today, most critically, yes, this was a Nixon era project. And then under Reagan, I believe within his first 2 years of office, it was eliminated. Mm-hmm. And what lessons can we learn from how the artists worked at that time? How can we reflect on the projects the artists were doing? I mean, right here in Wilmington, it was sending visual artists and musicians and dancers into schools, into nursing homes, into all these spaces, and how we can apply that today. So what we will take out of the research of this project, we certainly will have some independent catalogs, I believe, that historically can reflect on this and better document it. We also will have an exhibition. And I'm sure, and again, this is several years out, we're still in the research phase. I'm sure that will include thinking forward to what another CETA-like project could do for our communities and how we can commission artists to respond to that. So those are just some of the things we're thinking about now.
Before we go on, I want to remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV, chatting today with Molly Giordano, the Executive Director of the Delaware Art Museum. Molly, what you just alluded to, the thought that was going through my head was how your research and what you get out of going back and looking at the CETA program, how that could very easily and constructively provide guidance on the federal funding that is coming through the American Rescue Plan. Because yes. Delaware is receiving a good bit of money, and this could conceivably be a blueprint or at least a guide for how some of that public funding could be used here in Delaware. And as you're talking to about the WPA projects, I couldn't help but think these are not expenditures. These are investments. They are investments in our communities and the vitality of our life. Do you see that as being a possible outcome of this project, to be that either that blueprint or that guide or or an identification of best practices, what worked, what didn't work?
Yes, absolutely. This is something Margaret has been pushing forward on for quite some time, and it's both incredibly exciting, but a little bit nerve-wracking that the timing is lining up in such a way where there's suddenly this massive federal stimulus that it seems like municipalities and governments across the country are trying to figure out how to use. We have a lot of problems we're trying to tackle, infrastructure being just one, putting people to work being another, retraining, and how we can and take this blueprint, which is not well understood, like the WPA is much better understood in our mindset. We're all taught about it in school. We're not taught about CETA in our history textbooks. How we can take this blueprint, say, this is what worked during that time period. This is what didn't. Here's how this could be applied to our communities in 2021 and beyond. That absolutely is a critical component of this research and this presentation. And I think the point to take away here and why it was so, CETA was so successful, we were talking more about sort of block grants of relief funding and giving the local entities quite a bit of control and therefore giving the artists themselves quite a bit of control to figure out how to best serve their communities, their neighborhoods, the people living directly around them. And I think that is an area where artists are exceptional. It's nobody is better than an artist at envisioning what our future is going to look like, how to tackle complex problems that we as a society can't even figure out how to talk about, let alone envision a solution for. And giving boots on the ground arts organizations and artists money to envision these problems can move our society forward in ways we can't even imagine today. Mm-hmm. And I know that Margaret and I, as well as everybody at the Delaware Art Museum and the board, are fully committed to kind of illuminating this history and talking about that path forward. And it kind of goes hand in hand with our new strategic vision, where we are deeply interested in kind of that nexus of the economy, of work, of placing artists not just as sort of out there on the fringes, but as essential workers in their own right, working in our communities and elevating their status. So I think this exhibition could not come at a better time. And I don't think when we started this conversation, we knew we'd be seeing billions in federal stimulus funding. So if we can have those conversations, we'd be delighted.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back to something you alluded to earlier when you were talking about the 1968 exhibition and how photos could, the photojournalism could help us sort of better grasp what that was all about. Can you speak to, and this clearly is what you're doing with the museum, could you speak to how the role that art has played in helping us to address some of these very difficult issues in ways that, like you say, we might not want to talk about, but they help us to get a better grasp and come up with a way that we can begin to discuss.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Ashcan School of Art and, you know, some of the great paintings you've exhibited there, just as just one example.
Oh, and I would go even further back, Paul, to the Pre-Raphaelites who were responding to the Industrial Revolution and responding to moral themes of the influx of farm workers moving into the city, the drastic lifestyle changes. And these are issues that are so complex and so vast, it's very hard to have conversations, even on an individual level sometimes, about the changes happening in our society. I mean, it's been a very fraught year, as all of us know, working through the pandemic and political changes and social unrest. And artists are best suited to come up with the new language, whether that's a visual language, whether we're talking about an actual language, I mean, poetry and literary works of art, movement through dance, theater. This is the best way, I believe firmly, for people to come together and for a glimpse of time, see something different. I think we had a terrific commissioned dance performance here at the museum last week, reflecting on a work of art that's on loan to us from the Art Bridges Foundation, which is an arm of Crystal Bridges out in Arkansas. And it was a moving experience because for that 1 hour, I was able to see the world through an entire entirely new lens through the dancer's choreographer and the painter who had created this masterful work of art. I don't know how else to do that when you can't get through with just one-on-one talking. And I think it might be time in our society to put aside the talking for a little bit and to have some more experiences. And that's where the art, that's where the arts really comes through.
Well, I think too often our talking is all cerebral and all intellectual. And the issues that we grapple with the most are, they transcend that.
Yeah,
they transcend the emotional and the mental and the spiritual. And that's where the arts grapple with those other components of these difficult issues.
It is. And we've been thinking too a lot about storytelling in that vein. How you move people, how you convince people, how you appeal to their emotions and connect with them on a different level, often through storytelling, whether that's visual or spoken. And we're in the process of partnering with DCAD to create some really innovative programs around storytelling that kind of capture that essence. So stay tuned for what that will look like in the coming months.
Great. Well, in the 30 seconds or so we have left, where can our listeners find out more about the Delaware Art Museum and what you've got on exhibition and events coming up?
I encourage you to go to delart.org. It's D-E-L-A-R-T.org. That's our website. You can click on the What's On button and it'll give you all the upcoming exhibitions and programs. We have so much happening from Free Thursday happy hours to a variety of performances, talks, lectures, and exhibitions coming up. And to also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for breaking updates on our programs and new announcements.
Well, Molly Giordano, the Executive Director of the Delaware Art Museum, thanks so much for joining me today. It's really been a pleasure, and congratulations again on this grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Well, thanks, Paul, and many thanks to our hardworking staff who's been responsible for this grant. So I appreciate you having us on today.